The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hello and greetings again, dear Sangha. So lovely to practice together. So lovely. Not taken for granted. I have this image of us in different places, and so I so appreciate the words and chat coming through and the different places you are in the world. So appreciate feeling your presence, all of us together. Powerful, powerful. Thank you. So today I would like to speak about this teaching, this concept, this practice that's often misunderstood in the West. Not perhaps so much by Buddhists, but maybe by us too at times. But this word has been co-opted, this teaching has been co-opted by the popular culture and misrepresented, misunderstood. So this teaching I'd like to talk about today is the beautiful, profound teaching of karma. Karma. So in the West, it's often thought of as an inheritance, and it's often bad. Like, oh, what have I done, or what has this person done in their past life that they deserve this, or they must have done something terrible, or I must have done something terrible, and basically using the teaching of karma as flagellation, as a way to flagellate, either self-flagellate or flagellate others. So it's not a helpful, and it's not a useful way to use this practice, to interpret this practice, to understand this practice. So I want to speak a little bit about that, and actually to the profundity of what karma means here and now for us. And it's not this magical thing, this idea that we don't quite understand, and it's weird, and it's in some other dimension. So not to think of karma as destiny or as fate, as it is often thought of, but it's really a distortion to think of it as fate. It's a distortion of the Buddhist teachings. It's definitely a distortion. And I love the words of Andrew Olensky, saying their name properly, Olensky, who says that karma has unparalleled profundity and significance. I love that, unparalleled profundity, the concept of karma in the teaching. So let's do away with this magical, this weird thing that we don't even know, fate, destiny. Let's do away with that understanding altogether. But instead, consider, first of all, the word karma simply means action. And it's derived from the verbal root vakur, which means to do, to make. In Pali, to do, to make. You already get the sense, right? To do, to make is different from something you inherit, something magical and weird, right? So, to do, to make. There are three distinct senses of the word here. There are three distinct senses of this word here. And yet, these three distinct senses, which I will describe in a moment, are inseparable aspects of the same process of karma. Okay, so here are the three aspects. So the first one is the decision to do something. It's the intention, is the decision to do something. Okay, that's the leading edge. The second aspect is the action that actually carries the thing out, is the action. And the third aspect is what we make thereby as the result of that action. So there are these three distinct aspects. So let me repeat that. So the first is the decision or the intention to do something. The second is the action that actually carries it out. And the third is the result of the action, what we make. And karma is actually all three of those. They're inseparable. They're distinct, but inseparable. Not just the intention, not just the action itself, and not just the result. It's all three of them, which is so beautiful and profound. It's right here, right now. So the Buddhist understanding is that these three parts are the same whole. So the intention being the leading edge of karma, which directs the activities of the mind, speech, and the body. All of those are considered actions. Notice that the mind, thoughts are considered actions in Buddhism, actions of the mind. Speech is considered action of speaking, of course, and the body is considered action. So all those three. So again, intention is the leading edge of the karma, which directs the activities, which then on the trailing edge, it accumulates the karmic formations or the karmic dispositions. Karmic dispositions. It's our disposition. If we just drop the word karmic, it's our dispositions, it's how we show up, it's how we ourselves are made up of those dispositions, which also is the intention, the actions, and the dispositions. So in other words, action is preceded, every action, the action of the mind, speech, and body, is action is already preceded by some doing, right? By some doing, and that doing is where the decisions are made, is the intention, is the doing of the intending, the volition, the aligning or not aligning. It's that there's some doing before the action. And then there is a result in the making. In the making of our unique personality, of our dispositions. So the main idea behind karma is the relationship between what we choose to do and what we make of ourselves. What we choose to do and what we make of ourselves. Let me just pause here. Wow. To me, this teaching is so profound. It's not about fate. Oh, poor me. What have I got? It's actually a powerful, empowering teaching of what we choose to do and what we make of ourselves. So powerful. So powerful. I love this teaching, and every time I'll just share with you, as I come to this and many teachings over the years, over time, there are more nuances, there is more beauty. Maybe when I was younger, my early years of practice, there was some level of understanding. And the more I come to these teachings, there is a newer level of appreciation for the beauty, for the profundity of these practices. So I invite you to see them with their fresh eyes, even if you're practiced, experienced practitioner. Don't hear the word karma and go, I've studied this. Appreciate it as if with fresh eyes in your practice, in your heart and mind in this moment. So one last thing I want to say, and there's more I want to say tomorrow. So there is this expression in Pali, sankaram abhi sankarito, sankaram abha sankarito, which are many ways that can be translated to English, and again, according to Andrew Olensky, could be translated as one forms formations, or one constructs constructions, or one creates creations. One fabricates fabrications. So, an action both involves the activity as well as building something as the product of it. And an image that is used in the suttas often is the image of a potter on a pottery wheel. A potter is engaged in the creative process of shaping, forming the clay, and making something to his will, with his intention, with his desire, with his actions. So intention, actions is forming the clay, forming the clay. And then when the pot is done, it's put in a kiln and it's fired. It's put in a fire. And then it's an enduring, it's an everlasting artifact, this pot. So think of ourselves, our characters, our personalities, our very self, quote-unquote self, as this, again, Olensky puts it beautifully, ossified karmic relics. Ossified, it's, or rather, as a gallery of ossified karmic relics, the accumulated residue of earlier dynamic processes of intention and action. I'll close by reading that one more time. What we take to be our very self is viewed in Buddhist thought as a gallery of ossified karmic relics, the accumulated residue of earlier dynamic processes of intention and action. There's so much more here to say, but just to end and say, think of karma as an empowerment, as an empowering teaching that, one, we can change, we can change. Anyway, we're out of time, so much more to say, but we have time together tomorrow. Well, maybe. Life is so impermanent and unpredictable, but if all, maybe we'll see each other tomorrow. Take good care. Looking forward to practicing together. Be well.